Good afternoon, everyone. This is your 1 minute warning. We'll get started in 1 minute. Test, test, test. Okay, thank you.
Test, test. There you go. That's good. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to go through the intro. I'll turn it over to you for traditional,
okay.
And you can go through public reporting. Now I'll do the rest.
Yep.
Okay. All right. I think we're going to get started here. If I can get this adjusted, okay. Can everyone hear me? Okay. Okay. I always think I sound weird through a microphone, so and it's hard to tell sometimes. How loud I actually am. So welcome to the accountability session. We are here to talk about the new letter grade system that we are implementing due to a state law that passed a little over a year ago. I am Chris Janzer with the Michigan Department of Education. I run the accountability team and I have Chad Bailey with me. And we will be your tour guides on our journey this afternoon. I have up, we have a resource page started for A to F materials. You can actually grab our presentation from there. The URL is just michigan.gov/MDE for Michigan Department of Education. Then put a hyphen in there and it's school grades. We don't have a ton up yet. We have a copy of the legislation itself. We've got the peer review panel that was required by the law. They had to do a report. That's up there as well. And then the overview documentation is where you can find our presentation. Looks like it's actually the second to the last link in that table up there. So with that, there's a couple of other goodies there as well. And in the coming weeks, we will be populating that with more resources. So we'll have a guide up at some point. We'll have technical business rules. We've got a one-pager, which is actually about two pages up there right now. We've got some old State Board of Ed presentations. And I didn't see, but I thought we were going to add the finalized cut scores as well. So those should be up there, if not today, very shortly. So again, welcome. We're going to talk about the letter grade and ranking system. It doesn't rank schools. The legislation calls these labels ranking labels. We'll get into that here in a bit. So I mentioned you can grab our presentation from our A to F resource page. I'm going to go through the background and development of the system. Chad is then going to take over and talk to you about the main system itself. And then I'll come back in and talk about there's sort of a carve-out system for unique schools, alternative schools, center programs, et cetera. So remember, this is a new grading system this year. Yet another accountability system that we are working on. Not by our choice. So this all started back in December of 2018. The technical term is Public Act 601 of 2018. Barely passed in the lame duck session and was signed into law by Governor Snyder, I believe, December 28th, as they basically had left for the year. So what this requires is an accountability system that calculates letter grades and ranking labels for all public schools in the state. It does not require a summative or overall letter grade or ranking, so you won't see that in this report. You will see letter grades for things like proficiency and a graduation rate, but we're not calculating whether a school overall is a B or a C or whatever. We are also required, just like the school index, to identify low performing schools. Somewhat confusingly, it refers to these as comprehensive support and improvement schools, just like the index system does. So we will be identifying those. We're not going to be identifying those this first go around. That will come later this fall. We're trying to sync it up with the identification cycle that we have in the index system so that we're not identifying CSI schools every other year, basically. We are also required to identify the highest achieving schools, AKA reward schools. And then the law also mentions the identification of schools with consistently underperforming subgroups. There's a little asterisk with that, which I will get to I think Chad might talk about that in a bit. I mentioned a carve-out system, as I have been kind of calling it. So the law mentions these schools called alternative education campuses. It doesn't just include alternative high schools. I mentioned center programs. And there's a couple of other school types that are in that as well. But essentially what that does is once a school is identified as one of those school types, it gets moved into this other system and would not get a letter grade or ranking report. I also mentioned at the top on our resource page, we have this report done by a peer review panel. The legislation required that a peer review panel be appointed, and they were to review our work basically and write a report on what they thought of it, basically. Talk a little bit more about that. So it had five members. They were all appointed by the state legislature and the governor. The governor appointed three members. The House and the Senate appointed one each. They were autonomous, so they did meet with us basically try to glean what we were, how we were developing the system, given the legal requirements. They took basically those discussion sessions with us and wrote out a report. They gave the report both to the department, but the legislature as well, back on Halloween. And again, if you want to read that, that is up on that A to F page, resource page that we have. So the approaches that the department used in developing the system, because this is an additional accountability system, it's not replacing the school index. So this is another report that people can choose to look at or ignore, whatever they want to do with. We wanted to try and keep it simple and understandable. For parents in the general public, but also for us as well, so you guys, but us too. This is, we're doing this reporting frenzy, and it's getting really hard to keep track of the way that we're starting to calculate things. So what we wanted to do was reuse existing policies, practices, and procedures so that those of us that live and breathe this every day aren't stepping back and saying, well, now hang on a second, so we do it this way in the school index, but it's slightly different in the A to F system. So where possible, we reused existing definitions, calculations, and that sort of thing. And then we also wanted to keep it as aligned as closely as possible to existing MDE priorities and systems. So again, my team, we're responsible for the parent dashboard. We have the school index, and then we do that annual education report too, and those are all slightly different, and so we are trying to maintain our sanity as much as possible in doing this. So in developing the system, it uses cut scores to determine what's an A, what's a B, et cetera. And we use a standard setting process for the first time in our accountability work. those of you that are also in the assessment world might be familiar with that the standard setting process is used to basically assign cuts to the different performance levels on the MSTEP and other state assessments. Anyway, we went through a generic standard setting process. We used a out-of-state organization that has done this in several other states, Center for Assessment. They came in, worked with actually a group of Michigan educators to develop what were called performance descriptors. This was sort of more generic statements about what a high-performing school might look like, or what a low-performing school might look like. The group then reviewed and discussed those and sort of finessed those statements. The center then went back, took our preliminary data back in late summer, and ran a bunch of descriptive statistics basically to kind of show, you know, what were the distribution of schools at certain percentiles and all that sort of stuff. And then they came back with mostly the same group of educators to try and hammer out, okay, using actual data, what, and using this definition of what we thought a high-performing school was, how does that kind of shake out to like an A school for proficiency? How does this shake out for a B? And kind of went through each indicator and each grade level or letter grade and ranking label for that. Those recommendations were then submitted to the department. And at that point, the State Board of Education got involved. And they actually changed most of the cut scores that came out of that group. They tweaked them for participation, English learner progress, graduation rate, proficiency, and growth. And then they also asked us to change the methodology for this peer school comparison. And Chad's going to talk about the indicators, so I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself here, but peer school comparison with similar schools is an indicator in the system. The characteristics that we were using in it, for whatever reason, the state board wanted to tweak, and so we ended up tweaking those for that as well. And actually with that, I will turn it over to Chad to kind of go through some of the details.
Good afternoon, everybody. Everybody hear me? Yeah, okay. So I'm gonna go through the traditional section. So not the alternative education campuses, that special carve-out Chris talked about, but the traditional that go through. So that traditional setting will get 5 letter grades on 5 different components: proficiency, growth, grad rate, EL progress, and the similar schools or peer schools. There's lots of names for it, but a comparison to other schools. As Chris mentioned, we try to simplify in the system. So in things like proficiency, it is a math and ELA combined score. So you get a 1 score, you're not looking at multiple content areas, you're looking at 1 combined. You're still doing full academic year students. Same concept with growth, that you're doing a combined, not breaking it out by content area. English learner progress is the same as used for index. There's really no tweak there. It counts students who are either on a meeting growth trajectory or meeting proficiency on WIDA. Either case, they're counting as meeting progress. Grad rate is the same thing that's reported in CEPI. There's no adjustment from that. It's CEPI's graduation rates. It is using the best of the 4, 5, or 6-year cohorts. So for high school, it'll look at all of them, and whichever one is best, that's what the letter grade gets assigned on. All 3 get reported in the display, but the letter grade itself would be assigned in the best, the highest cohort. And then proficiency compared to similar schools, which we'll talk about a little more in a second. The law also adds 3 non-graded indicators that are ranking. So instead of an A through F, it gives a significantly above average, above average, average, below average, significantly below average. So those five categories, for these three indicators, the law determined that that was a more appropriate label for them. And this would be rate of not chronically absent students, participation, and subgroup average comparison to the state average for that subgroup. Again, participation goes to combine math and ELA. So you'll notice in those quick version of both of those, there's no disaggregation. We do not break down by subgroups. So the proficiency and growth and grad rate, all that is just the all students. It doesn't break down by racial, ethnic, or economic disadvantage, English learner, or special ed. It's just the all students. Similar for all of these. So key features of this system, there is no summative, as Chris said. You will not find Happy Middle School is overall an A school. That doesn't exist. You will find Happy Middle School has an A for proficiency, a B for growth, a C for EL progress, an A for grad rate. Each indicator will be independently ranked, and there is no overall. As I just mentioned, indicators are the all students, with the minor exception of EL progress. It's obviously your EL students. You can't do all students, go take WIDA. Only it's appropriate for EL students. And for the subgroup indicator, it's a roll-up of all the subgroups. So each individual subgroup is compared independently to the state average for that subgroup. The difference of those differences for the subgroups are rolled up. And minimum end sizes are as given there. So for student growth, proficiency, and the inclusion of a school getting a similar school, they have to have at least one tested kid. EL growth, assessment participation, and subgroup, those are all based on 30, you have to have at least 30 kids to that component. And grad rate and crack absenteeism are both, you have to have at least 10 kids. Which are recycling existing thresholds from other systems. So this is where Chris talked about similar schools, that the state board modified methodology. The original intent was to simply borrow similar schools used in parent dashboard. So parent dashboard already does a similar schools model. So to the statewide average, it compares to a group of demographic peers and a group of geographic peers, and then the school's performance. We were planning to use the demographic peer from parent dashboard, state board of ed, wanted some other indicators and some different weights. So they specifically chose that they would like to find similar peers based on the percent of free lunch students, students with disabilities FTE, and the student FTE for the overall count of students. So schools that are similar size in enrollment using student FTE, students that serve the same portion of equivalence of students in special ed programming, and the percent of students free lunch using FTEs to student FTE. That was their version, and with a weights of 70, 20, and 10. So that's what the state board wanted, so that's what we will do. The methodology for that, you create Z-scores within each characteristic so that you don't have scaling issues that, right, a school has 200 kids enrolled, but only, you know, five FTEs in special ed, knowing the scales are going to be different for those, use Z-scores to flatten the scales so they can be combined. Doing weighted, you apply weights as appropriately. You do filters that schools are grade band grouped so that you don't compare an elementary to high schools and so on and so forth. And then you do an aggregate closeness, so you're doing a simple geometric distance calculation. And then once you have those, you're then doing a proficiency difference between the school and its peer schools. So that was similar schools. This gets to the closest you will get to a composite or overall ranking. There's no overall letter grade. The law does call, though, for a identification of comprehensive and support schools. It borrows the federal term, but defines it very differently. which is one of the key points of why this could not replace school index. We asked the Fed, said, can we use what our legislature just defined to fulfill federal requirements? USA was very clear that no, your state system as written would not meet the requirements. Part of the reason is this definition of state CSI. While valid, just doesn't meet a federal definition. And so that was the sticking point there. State CSI, and you will now hear us refer to CSI or federal CSI, and you'll always hear us refer then to state CSI. State CSI means letter grade CSI. It's confusing. We appreciate that. We're sorry. We have no clue how to make it less confusing other than modify both federal and state CSI. State CSI is defined as a high school graduating less than two-thirds of its students. That aligns very well with the federal definition. Federal definition has the same criteria. The problem is state CSI has this new one that says any school receiving the lowest grade on all of the following: proficiency, growth, and similar schools. You cannot make that align with the methodology that is prescribed in federal law that does a composite of all indicators. They have to have one, and it's used the same way at the building. It doesn't work, and so that became the sticking point. So that is how that defines. They have to have proficiency, growth, in similar schools, and they all have to be the lowest grade or have an F. Yes. That is, I believe, the four. Yeah, so they aligned that with the feds, and that was still there. So they borrowed the federal term that says it's graduating less than two-thirds and four-year cohort. Thank you for the clarification.
Can I jump in real quick?
Yes.
There is a slight difference with the state and federal criteria for the low grad rate. So the state specifies less than two-thirds. The federal is less than or equal to two-thirds. So I got a very sort of minute difference, but still a difference.
Some schools, yeah. It impacts a few schools.
School-wide early college programs are all 5 years. They still, they all
I forget how it's defined. I want to say the answer is no if they're reported properly as an EMC student, but I can't say for certain. I can't tell you for certain.
EMC students, again, if reported correctly, shouldn't count in the four-year cohort, either for or against. So, you know, they would count positively in that five-year.
So the key point there, make sure they're reported with the EMC program code and MSDS, or it could have negative consequences. The funny one that comes through also a tension point with the federal law is that the state law says there's a hard cap on 5% of schools being identified for CSI. The feds have a floor of 5% of Title I schools. So the state law is you cannot exceed more than 5% of all public schools. The feds, you must identify at least 5% of Title I schools. And that was another sticking point that we could not get US Ed to work to a unifying definition. As Chris mentioned, we will at least attempt to make those named in the same year, so it's not confusing that, hey, we named federal CSI in 1 year, we get state CSI another year, and every year there's a list of CSIs we have to watch. It's already confusing enough that you have two lists. At least they can come out roughly the same time and say, we're on one, we're on the other, we're on neither, we're on both. Get through it and work out. And that will be coming in fall 2020 using 1920 data. The state law also mandates underperforming subgroups. However, in this case, they were very hands-off and basically just said, do what the feds do. Like, that's a minor paraphrase, but by and large, the state law says, identify underperforming subgroups as ESSA defines it. So in this case, there will be nothing different. We are not producing a list inside A through F or letter grade system for that. We're simply wholesale borrowing what school index does. So in that case, there is no federal state, there's just TSI and ATS. So targeted support and improvement and additional targeted support. So we will continue to identify under those criteria. It does add returns, what we had under our ESEA flexibility, the category of reward school. Yeah?
So will we have state ETS and state?
No. There is just TSI is TSI is TSI. ATS is just ATS. So there's one list for those. And we wish that they had done the similar concept with, on the other one, just say letter grade, CSI, name CSI. There we go. We return under ESEA Fed Flex, or top to bottom concepts of a reward school. This is a high school that has, or this is a school that meets any of the following criteria. It is a high school with a grad rate of at least 99%, or is a school receiving the highest grade, or that is an A, in any of the following proficiency growth or similar schools, in not meeting criteria for a CSI, TSI, or ATS. So federal CSI, state CSI, TSI, or ATS. If you're not in those categories and you meet those conditions, you can be a reward school. Yeah. It can be either or both. Like if you meet either one of them, you'll get there. There'll be some that'll probably have both. That doesn't get them extra reward. That just, yeah, it's not an and, it is any.
No, I'm saying high school graduation.
No, so it is an or. It can be a high school that has 99% or that high school meets any of the criteria below. Either case, it's classified as reward. Okay.
I'm sorry, which graduation year are you going
to go? The 4 year, I believe, is what we are using. I think that is still 4 year.
And if you're an elementary school, that would show up as
For an elementary school, that would not apply. It would only be schools that have a graduation possibility. You could view that as an advantage or a challenge. However, this is just what the law put in, the law prescribed. These are the categories to use to identify reward school. Yeah, so you could view that. We haven't looked at the distributions with reward and CSI yet. So those are the frameworks of how a traditional school works. This is a view of how the display will generally appear and feel. You'll notice it borrows a tile concept like we had in School Index. It's relatively simple. Unlike School Index, there is not a click-through. This is what you get. This is your layer that goes in there. You get a letter grade. It's based off things that combine. We'll show you the two underlying subjects, but it's based solely off that combined. Similar with growth. Performance of peer, you'll find peer average, and a little dot to tell you how far above or below. On letter grade based on that distance. And graduation rate, it'll show all four or all three rates, 4, 5, and 6, and it'll do some kind of highlighting around whatever the best rate happens to be in that condition. And a letter grade then is based solely off whatever is best.
Say that one more time. The letter grade is graduation.
Whatever is the best rate. So the best of the 4, 5, or 6 year rate. You'll have those rates. Whatever one is best, letter grade is off that. So it's to the betterment of the school. The school gets the advantage there. Whatever is most advantageous for them, it's the best rate.
That one doesn't count for reward school. It won't be best, it'll be the 4 year.
It could help them. So if they happen to be an A, no. No, it doesn't. I had to think. You almost got me. Oh my God. It's not in my list of any grades. It's not in my list of any grades.
So for sure, the high school, I just want to clarify.
No, you're fine.
For sure, the high school graduation rate is going to be used to define the reward school to be a four-year program. But the grade on the report card is the best out of 4, 5, or 6. Is that still
correct?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
There's no cap in the law that we are, that we have read. And then this is just a similar concept for the other indicators. English learner, based simply on its rate. Student subgroup, it'll default to like a building overall, and you'll see the roll-up, but you can then, there'll be a little filter that you can trail down to individual subgroups to kind of see how they perform to the statewide average. So there'll be an overall mean distance of your subgroups from the state average squashed to a building level because they wanted it simple, so one thing to look at, so squashed up to a building level, and then you can, if you desire, to look at specifically how did my white students, my black students, my ED, my EL, you can go through and drop down and see, it'll adjust for that. On track, similar concepts, and again, participation, it'll be based on the combined, it'll show the other two. So in this case, right, you can tell math is our weaker point, let's go work on that. So that's how the displays look. And before I hand it back to Chris, are there any questions on those two sections? Okay, Chris is gonna go to the fun carve-out section.
All right, thanks, Chad. All right, yeah, so far it's a pretty bare-bone system as far as accountability systems go. And the law, there's not a lot in the law, and we tried to keep things as simple as possible. So talking now about the alternative education campuses, as they're referred to in the legislation, these would be schools that get excluded from receiving letter grades or ranking labels. The law states sort of four school types. So we have special education center programs, strict discipline academies, adjudicated youth programs, and then a catch-all, any other school serving a specialized student population. And that's sort of left up to the department's determination, which we are using as our alternative school typology. The department, are defining alternative schools using three criteria. They are based on data submissions that the schools do in the Educational Entity Master, the EEM, and the Michigan Student Data System, the MSDS. So the two that we look at in the EEM there is a school emphasis field in the EEM. Alternative education is one of those values that can be submitted in that. So we're looking for schools that have submitted that as their school emphasis. And then the other piece for the EEM is they're reported as serving a grade or setting of alternative education. So those two are the those two values are what we pull from that educational entity master. On top of that, then we look at the school's MSDS submission to see if they are reporting their students as participating in an alternative education program. And we're looking for a 90% of the enrolled students as being reported with that. Dave. Yep, so I'll get to that here in a minute or so. Thank you. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, so if you send us an email at mde-accountability@michigan.gov, one of our colleagues is actually digging through, because we're getting a lot of these questions right now, and he would be the one to talk to. Yeah, without knowing your data, I wouldn't, yeah. Yep. So that is one of the four, the criteria. This next slide is a little bit busy, but so for the other school types, we've lumped adjudicated youth and juvenile detention facilities into the section here on the slide. But for these two types, we are looking solely at EEM fields. And these are educational setting flags in the EEM. I'm just going to read them off. Juvenile detention facility, a delinquent institution, neglected institution, lockdown school, residential child care institution, or youth home, or strict discipline academy. Any of those, any of those six educational settings will flag a school as being in this exclusion system, basically. And then last but certainly not least, a little bit more well-known, our center programs for students with disabilities. These, again, we're looking for a special education center program entity type flag in that educational settings field in EEM. And then we're also going to MSDS and looking at the, to make sure that the students that are reported in these entities are flagged as IEP students, basically. We're looking for a 90% threshold there as well. And that, again, is to ensure that we have a little bit of integrity in this carve-out system. We're finding that a lot of people weren't paying attention to what they were putting in EEM, and we're seeing frantic cleanups happening, going on right now. What kind of happens with these schools? So they don't get the up to 5 letter grades or 3 ranking labels. There's essentially 2 pieces to what they would then get. So they will have a summary status. However, for this initial cycle, we're only collecting 1 of the 2 pieces of information through the GEMS system that Dave had asked about. And so we're not going to derive a summary status based on just 1 thing. So going forward, though, we will. But the 2 things that we're looking at, or that the law requires us to look at, is whether the school is in compliance with applicable law, and then whether enrolled students are making meaningful, measurable academic progress towards educational goals. That is what the law says. I don't have anything more specific, and that's what we're struggling with right now to get something more defined for that. So we are only collecting that first one with this go-around. It is in the GEMS system. I am told it is super easy. I am not a GEMS user, but once you get into GEMS, there is a single question. You say yes or no, and that is all we are doing. It shouldn't take you more than a couple of seconds to do. I'm seeing nods. So once we start collecting the educational goals piece, the summary status will be, you know, kind of hearkening back to our AYP days where we have the meet or does not meet. That's basically what these schools are going to be getting. They're going to meet the expectation. They would have to meet in both of those areas, so the compliance and the goals. If they don't meet both, they would get the school does not meet expectations. The alternative schools that are answering that yes or no question now, they will get a report, a public report. Ignore the box on the left. That'll show an NA, basically, and we'll have a compliance box that says compliant or yes, no, or something like that. We're still kind of developing the visual for that. This will also live in My School Data. It'll be part of the same A to F report that'll be coming out. I'm going to wrap up here a little early. Trying to think if there's anything we missed about the report itself. Let me talk about preview window and all that. So, is it new this year? So it won't be January 2018 or 19. So there's either something where it didn't meet the criteria, students weren't reported properly, or the EEM stuff wasn't. So again, without knowing the data specifically, I can't say for sure. Or it might not. It might have been created too late for us to get. Not for the initial cycle. Going forward, we should be able to catch it though, because this is all 18-19 data. Preview window. So we are aiming for a public release at the end of March. We are planning on having a 2-week preview window in My School Data. I'm anticipating that opening, no later than mid-March if we're going to be public in late March. I don't think we have a specific date yet, but we'll do our sort of familiar, if you are responsible for your school's school index report, it'll be the same sort of notifications that we do with that. I have been told we aren't making a big deal with the public release of this, so it should be fairly quiet, at least on behalf of the department. I can't promise what your local papers and television stations are going to do, though. We haven't really gotten many reporters sniffing around or anything like that yet. So it's, it's kind of all bets are off just because of the way this was done and all of that. So, but the department is not planning on doing a giant press release, or actually any press release for this. So to wrap things up then, where we are currently is, we are formalizing our data structure, so all the underlying data tables that live in our databases. We actually are pretty much done with that. Calculations are done. We're actually on the tail end of our validation right now. The similar schools and the subgroup comparison thing are the most complex pieces for us. They're new calculations for us, so those are things that we're paying a lot of attention to. Some of the other things were pretty much good because we're using our underlying student tables that we use for the school index and the AER report and all that. So that's going much more quickly. It's the new stuff that is we're learning kind of as we go along with it as well. We have business rules that we wrote way back in the summer. We have to finish updating those sort of as we developed it, you kind of learn, oh, what we thought worked well on paper doesn't really work well as we're kind of developing it, so we're doing tweaks there. So we're doing that. We're working with CEPI with the report design. What you saw on the screen were our mock-ups. The report will look very similar to that, as Chad kind of talked about. There will be this is what I was thinking when he was talking. With the reports, the department will have a disclaimer on there, which is kind of new for me. Again, it's not a popular report, as you can imagine, within the department, and there will be a nice disclaimer on there saying nicely kind of what the department thinks of it. So you can kind of prepare for that. We are also frantically working on supporting documentation. It won't be as, we won't have as many products out there as we do for the school index, but we are feeling that we will have enough to support you guys in supporting your communities and explaining this. So we're not working on a parent letter. We are working on a public guide, which is, I think we're at about 4 pages with that right now, and sort of a very high level, here's what it is, and here's what it means. As we get things finished, we're going to be putting them on that page that I talked about. So, yeah. I don't believe we have anything that we would wait for public release that I'm thinking of right now. Unless we do like a statewide file or something like that, but I don't think we've settled on that yet either.
Shy of like a results file, that would be the only thing that would delay, I think.
Yeah, so all the more narrative stuff we should have up by, certainly by preview. So. Yeah. If you go to the A to F page, we have the State Board of Ed presentations that we did, and I believe at least one of those has distributions in it. But because the State Board of Ed tweaked the cuts, the distributions have also changed, and we haven't had time to rerun those. Yeah. So. Yes, so the board actually made the cuts more forgiving. Which is actually one of our challenges, because we are predicting we will have lots and lots of reward schools. And while that is on the face maybe a good thing, the challenge is when you have lots of news stories out about how the education world in this state is in tailspin, or however you want to color it, and you have the department putting out a report that has several hundred reward schools. It's sort of, so it's, the challenge is the messaging around that kind of stuff. Same thing with, we kind of hit on this, the school identifications. That's going to be a challenge for us to message as well. That is more of a confusing thing, where it's, you know, when we had the color-coded scorecards on the top to bottom, people would conflate those all the time. I can't imagine how much worse this is going to be with two very similarly named things with slightly different criteria, and having to explain all that as well. So, thank you. Yes, that's the other thing. There is no funding for low-performing schools identified in the system. We got no funding for all this extra work to do. You know, I care about that. Probably not a lot of people do, but so yes, this is all unfunded.
Because there's no funding, if you're a state to be a magnet school, are there certain requirements for the local schools?
Yes. So the law requires the department to come up with some sort of supports for these schools. And that is not our area. Nothing has been decided as far as I know. Yeah. The other challenge I mentioned was coming up with those goals for alternative education campuses. Again, we're not doing those this go around just because it's been hard to figure out and then having to collect that and all of that stuff. It's scheduled for a March 2020 rollout. Please visit us, michigan.gov/mde-school-grades. You can also get to it from our main accountability page. We'll have more stuff coming out in the coming weeks. That is all I had. Take questions if you want, if you have any. Couple, yeah. Yeah, so there will be a,
if you go back to the slide, I think it's on there, but if not.
Yeah, so you probably can't see it from back there, but we have a little, there will be a hyperlink or a button that, as far as I know, the design will have like a pop-up box that'll display the list of peer schools. So, yeah. Kelly? That is on our to-do list before we do preview, to kind of see. Even though we're not identifying on 18-19 data, I know there are several offices and lots of people in the department that are interested in how much of a mess that's going to be. So. Right. Yeah. Yes, sir. Lime green star. We got into trouble with color coding a few years ago.
Sorry, I can't make my vote. But my serious question.
Yeah.
I've got a friend who is stubborn and doesn't like surprises and will try to figure out sort of bugging myself. Where the schools I work with are at. Is there, because you're looking at math and ELA only for proficiency, is there an easy report in my school data?
Yeah, so thanks for the question. We are planning on, basically, so if you go to your school index report and log in, download the student level data file, those are going to be the same numbers we use for like your proficiency growth. Your grad rate you should know already. Participation you should know. You should be able to grab that from the student level data file.
So, well, that's a good question.
Yeah. It'll be like the school index, so meeting the AGP. The only things that you couldn't do right now would be the peer comparison and the subgroup thing. I think that's it. I think everything else, EL Progress is part of this. What's that? Yep, and that's in that student download file.
For school index, yeah. So
yeah.
Basically the proficiency and the growth and the EL Progress, all those come from school index tables. So we're reusing the same rates. You can go to school index, see the rates you're going to use for the building. We're just going to apply them over, combine math and ELA, switch that together within those components. So you can punch individual rates or students behind those.
We should have the cuts. The cuts have been finalized for a little bit now. And we have a document that's ready to post. I'm not sure why it's not up there, because we had planned on having it available for this presentation. So that should be up as well. So it should be fairly, is it there?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
So it is a direct pull index, but it's not a, an index, by the time you're combining index values. In A through F, you're only combining rates. So you'll find the ELA rate within school index, find the math rate within school index, and just take a straight, simple average of the two rates.
Long-term, yes. This first cycle, no. So this is where we're going to really point people to the work that we did on the school, the downloadable student-level file for the index, because it's everything you need for most of this report is already in that. So there won't be you'll have to log in to get to the preview, but there is no file then that you would download. Yes. Yep. Yep.
This one isn't really a question, but rather a suggestion. You don't have any education before. Mm-hmm. Just do. I must have got probably 150 calls about what am I again?
Yeah.
Because they weren't identified in the box on the school index. I don't know if you guys. It's just a suggestion.
It's a.
Super, super awesome if it said year two TSI, year one ATS.
Okay. Right.
Right.
Right. Well, because the AER is federal, you won't have to worry about your state identification for that. But yeah, thank you for the.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. Did I miss any questions? We're good. I think. Well, we're good for now. Okay. Thank you, everyone. That is all we had. We'll be here for a little bit if you want to come up and see us.